Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 95. That's right, we're just five away from the big 100. We'll have to do something special, like give away Pete's new iPad or something. I don't know. But anyway, this is Michael Loft, and joining me tonight is Joe Steinkamp and Peter Bosley. Our topic is this month in access technology. We're going to look at some of the highlights for March 2011. So, where do we start? I guess we'll go through the page here, and then later Pete's going to play with his iPad too. And I know some folks have asked for a little bit of under the hood and Android. Maybe Joe can give us some stuff there too. Not to put you guys on the spot or anything, but it seems like as far as the Twitter sphere and even Facebook, the biggest story of the month would appear to be AT&T wanting to acquire T-Mobile for some $39 billion. So I'm going to start with you, Pete. What are your thoughts on this one, Mr. Tech?
Well, I obviously don't really think it's a good idea. I believe that it will be bad for the majority of consumers, especially any of those who happen to be T-Mobile customers. But I do suspect that given the regulatory landscape and the amount of money AT&T has at its disposal, that they will find a method for getting it approved by the regulatory agencies who oversee it, which in the U.S. would be the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission. So I think we'll just have to live with it and just hope for the best. There's going to be some upsides, but I think they're going to be kind of few and far between.
Well, yeah. I mean, A, you have the people paying for T-Mobile generally paying less for their data and voice plans. And, of course, the U.S. senators already ask the feds to get involved with that and say, hey, people shouldn't have to pay more just because AT&T is taking it over. And perhaps the biggest thing, they want to actually convert the frequency bands, 1700 megahertz bands used by T-Mobile for either rolling out LTE services, right? So ultimately they're going
That's right.
to want the T-Mobile folks to convert over to AT&T or get rid of the phones that they have because it will be useless.
Sure. That'll be a requirement. They've already stated that since T-Mobile owns a nationwide spectrum license on those frequencies, with their existing 3G network, they plan to eventually retire that network and spin up their LTE in that space in combination with some of the spectrum licenses down at the 700 megahertz band that they already own.
Now, one of the things they tout is, oh, this will be great because now you can roam between AT&T and Verizon, but I assume to do that, you're going to have to be on LTE or have phones, right, that are capable of doing that.
Right. The LTE roaming is a while off, but that will be one of the few benefits. I think one of the things that AT&T likes to say is, oh, there's so much competition in the U.S., you know, it's up to five different carriers in some places, And while that might be technically true in some areas, these smaller regional carriers like MetroPCS and Cricket and you know companies like that, they still have to rely on larger carriers to provide their customers with access outside of these local areas where they have their own infrastructure. And so you look at a situation where there's currently four nationwide providers and they have the choice to pick between the ones that are compatible with whatever network technology they're using. And eventually you'll get to a space where, especially on the GSM side of things, there will be only one nationwide provider, and theoretically they could set their roaming rates wherever they like.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest concerns, certainly when you reduce the number of players. And what about Sprint? I mean, do you think they're on the table?
I don't think anything's really going to happen to Sprint. Sprint's too much of a value carrier right now. Of course, we said the same thing about T-Mobile, so I guess anything goes. It would be interesting to see really what would happen if Verizon came and gobbled Sprint up. I think that would be a similar situation. I don't think it would be good for Sprint customers, and Overall, I don't think it would be good for consumers. Verizon customers might benefit. I'm sure AT&T customers will be happy with the increased backhaul capacity and such that AT&T will get from absorbing T-Mobile. But there's a large number of people who will find that to be an unpleasant switch. And I think that as a whole, us as wireless consumers will find less price competition and that's obviously not an ideal situation.
Now, one of the
so what do you think about this being a land grab for towers, or this is a move to eat part of the spectrum? Because that's some of the speculation that's coming out of tech punditry, is that this is AT&T shooting for the future or going ahead and merging now, because it's easier to merge four carriers into three than for Sprint to turn around and try and gobble somebody else and then run into antitrust.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it. They have major capacity issues in a lot of the areas where T-Mobile has stronger infrastructure, and they're definitely looking towards the future. AT&T is definitely looking at this as a way for them to increase capacity over a relatively short period of time. And so, you know, from their perspective, it's a great move, and they know that they've got a regulatory hurdle. They know that this is going to be a challenging thing, and they know it's going to take a while. So if they're planning on competing with what Verizon's rolling out LTE-wise, they got to get moving, and they know and they understand that.
Now, that makes me wonder if this was part of AT&T's motivation to lower the prices on their prepaid. Of course, Sprint has had T-Mobile has had 10 cents a minute for quite a while, and it looks like AT&T has matched their pricing. So I wonder if that's to thwart off concerns that may come up in that space.
I think you'll see a lot of... Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. So there's been talk about if this does go through, the FCC can actually use the power to actually leverage some things, as in maybe cheaper broadband for rural areas, or possibly enforcing a little light net neutrality. So there's some X factors here that are still about to come out. If this deal does go through, the FCC does have a little bit more of a say-so than they had in previous times. And certainly with the climate going on, I'm sure there'll be a lot of, since we're facing down an election year very, very soon, I think there'll be a lot of positioning on what people will want, what people will need. And there's a possibility that there is a consumer benefit here, but I don't see it. This is my personal opinion. I'm just not sure about that.
Yeah, I know some people that work at AT&T in some of their network operations divisions, and I had an off the record conversation with them, shortly after the news hit, and you know they do see this as a benefit to their customers. And it's not all bad. It's definitely not all bad. Those of you who live in, places like New York City and San Francisco and Los Angeles, and you've got iPhones, T-Mobile has a lot of infrastructure in those areas. They've got a lot of towers. They've got a lot of backhaul capacity. Backhaul is basically, to go off on a little tangent, backhaul is what connects towers to the infrastructure, data infrastructure, and phone infrastructure. When you talk about a cell site, there's not 100 phone lines running from that carry your phone calls. It's actually a data pipe. And what happens in these heavily populated areas is some of these towers have unlimited capacity. They may have, two or three T3s connected to them, but you've got 100 people trying to download YouTube videos over it, and the bandwidth just gets sucked up. And then, voice takes a certain amount of connections, and you'll see that, eventually things will get congested to the point where things will start dropping out. So AT&T's trying to do something to help themselves and help their reputation. They've gotten pretty beat up over the 3 years that they've had the iPhone. So there's some consumer benefit, but I think that as a net transaction, we'll see that it won't really benefit us as consumers as far as what we pay.
It's funny you say about the towers, is because at South by Southwest, AT&T actually brings in those big blue portable towers on 18-wheelers and sets up temporary towers around the city of Austin because there's such an influx of iPhone users and data usage. They actually have these things on standby to go to events so they can actually increase their capacity in places that they're already not having a big presence in, or just to bolster the network for those places where they already do have good capacity but are going to see an influx of users, say like CES in Vegas or something like that.
Yeah, what Joe's talking about is they've got trucks that have satellite gear and basically a miniature version of a cell phone site, a cell site, and they can just drive these things around and position them around an event. And they haven't performed great over the, you know, like the 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009 shows, but I think in 2010 and 2011 they seem to do a little bit better.
So also AT&T is putting bandwidth caps on their DSL and U-verse services. No surprise, I know Comcast has done it, but and I'm sure many others have done it, maybe more silently or not getting national press. Is that becoming pretty common, Pete? And you think that's to kind of fight people starting to use it for TV and getting away from paying for their cable services?
I do think there's a little bit of that, and really a lot of it comes down to, again, the infrastructure around the country. You know, when they're delivering bandwidth to you over copper a lot of the way, especially AT&T uses a technology where they go fiber the majority of the way, and the last hop to your house is actually over copper. They have capacity issues. A lot of cities they don't have enough backhaul connection to provide, you know, the increasing amount of bandwidth that we all demand using Netflix, and some people use a little bit less legal things, and you know, they're trying to recoup some of their costs. Now, on the flip side of that, these companies make billions of dollars a year, so I honestly don't have a lot of sympathy for them. I think that that we'll still see ways to get unlimited bandwidth just from value competitors, but you know, certainly there'll be some areas where there aren't any. If you live in a big city, you might have another cable provider that'll give you unlimited bandwidth, but I think bandwidth caps are kind of silly, and we'll have to see if they stick around or not.
So give us an idea.
I am so with him on this. The Rogers thing that's going on in Canada for our Canada listeners, where they're actually increasing caps and making it very difficult for Netflix, where you're going to actually have to go in and change your preferences and lower your actual stream of Netflix to get a lower band quality picture in order not to bump into these caps. You know, that directly rolls into Rogers' other corporational philosophy of, hey, I got to sell you HBO and Showtime and things like that. You know, and Netflix is constantly under fire. If you look back to some of the things that happened with some of the bandwidth with Level 3 and Comcast trying to leverage, at some point, audio that you're listening to right now is not as imperative as the video market and the amount of video bandwidth. And unfortunately, there are some of these guys who have some other plays. And, you know, when you go to AT&T, there's the triple play, which is, you know, phone, internet, and, of course, the movie channel / cable. So there is a little bit of a concern that maybe these guys are starting to play with that in order to maybe make it a little bit more palatable to go in one direction than the other.
So Pete,
and AT&T is delivering TV to you over the same pipe they're delivering your internet connection to you. Especially, in the U-verse space, the technology that's behind your TV boxes in your house over AT&T is coming down via IP. So it's the same thing. So the fact that they're trying to say that, oh well, we got to charge you extra for your bandwidth, I call a little bit of BS on that. I'm not sure I really buy that. So
give us an idea how much that bandwidth. Okay, so it's 150 gig or maybe 250 gig if you have U-verse. What do they pay per gig? I'm sure they buy by the terabyte, but I mean,
well, that's the thing. When they run their own networks, the costs are kind of hard to enumerate. I would be more okay with the usage based billing model if the overage fees were such that no matter how much you use, you couldn't get anything too crazy. You know, charging, what is it, $50 for an extra gigabyte?
I thought it was 10 gig.
maybe it's $10 for an extra gigabyte. That's insane to me.
No, I think it's.
I'm sorry, but
this article, unless it's wrong,
it depends on the plan.
Yeah, this article with AT&T says that it's $10 for 50 gig, which that doesn't sound too bad, unless this article's wrong. But
what's $10 for 50 gigs? That's
at AT&T if you go over
$2
your DSL.
A gig? No,
right.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
but and that also is $0.20 a plan. Remember, that's just the plan that they're reporting. That may not be, you know, another plan that they have going, because there's never more than one plan in something like this. There's always, you know, the economy plan or the more robust you download a lot plan. So there's a lot to be seen there too. Remember, we weren't sure about tethering at first too a couple of months ago. So with the iPhone and how that was going to work out, it generally works out not favorably to the consumer. Just, you know, to think about this, though, when you look at a movie of, like, high-definition proportions, if your family is much into high-definition with Netflix, to blow through 150 gig is nothing. I mean, that's like 30 hours of Netflix at full volume. So if your family is depending on Netflix and you've cut the cord from all your other entertainment dollar, you're going to eat that alive. And that's the bigger thing here is the distribution of content. What is the future of your content? The content that you want, how are you going to get it? Better yet, if you are a fan and you are a videophile or you do a lot of downloading, you know, like Pete is saying, maybe the metered internet is a possibility that would work out better that way. I think there's also some traction that we've had the all-you-can-eat buffet for a long time, so how dare you charge me every time I go back to fill up my plate. I'm not sure how that's going to work either. Certainly, it's going to be that way with wireless. Wireless is, I don't see that ever getting too much into the all-you-can-eat plans as much as I would like. And of course, the increase of video and the ease of video on devices is going to be the thing that forces this forward.
I guess here's where I'm at with this. I mean, charge me 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cents a gig for overage, and I might not be so upset. But you know, don't mark it up to the point where you're making it prohibitively expensive for me to do things the way I want to do things. Amazon has, you know, Amazon's cloud services, their computing cloud services and their storage service. They charge for bandwidth. They have to, but you know, the prices are reasonable.
Yeah, well, let's cover some other topics, because I assure you folks, this story is not over yet. It's going to be, especially with the AT&T and T-Mobile side of it. Let's talk about some Apple for just a moment or two. Pete, quite a few updates recently. I think we have 10.6.7 for Snow Leopard. What did they bring to the party with that thing?
10.6.7 was kind of a maintenance update for Snow Leopard. They fixed a lot of bugs. There were quite a few pretty nasty security vulnerabilities that they finally patched in 10.6.7, things that have been long overdue. So if you have not updated and you're running OS X, you need to go out and get that update as soon as you can. There were some updates to the way solid-state drives are handled for the new MacBook Pros, basically adding the trim command, which it's too technical to get into right now, but helps your solid-state drive last longer.
And I guess also the ability to quarantine infected files. You couldn't do that before?
I didn't get into that too much.
Okay, but we'll put that under the security category. I guess there's also some flickering on external displays and things of that sort. So anyway, yeah, I would agree if you go ahead and get that upgrade. But then also, we saw the release of 4.3 for iOS, and very shortly thereafter, 4.3.1. So I'm guessing 4.3 had some buggy boos that they needed to address pretty quickly. I know I had an issue of the phone seemed to have issue detecting whether it was to my face or away from my face and not quickly or efficiently switching between speakerphone and the earpiece.
Yeah, they seem to have continuing problems with the proximity sensor tuning. It's kind of surprising to me that they haven't managed to get that straight. There are also some bugs with the alarm, again, the over the daylight savings time switch. So that was really annoying. It's like, you know, do I really have to go out and buy a $20 alarm clock to wake up in the morning? Like,
oh, that's a good point. Yes, I had to shut down my phone, and then I had to go in and disable. It seemed like I did that, and that didn't work, and I had to actually disable something, whatever.
That's not the big story. The big story is what is happening with everybody's battery life, because that's the anecdotal story of the week, is that I did the upgrade and my battery isn't working, or it doesn't work as good as it used to. Now, I upgraded iOS on my iPad, and I did notice some battery it drained really quickly at first, but the recent update that I did to this latest version actually kind of stabilized it for me. Have you guys had any issues with battery life since the update?
Mine's I haven't gotten the update, you lucky dog. Since I'm on Verizon now, we're still stuck at 4.2.6. So,
yes, I forgot Verizon.
mine seems to be okay, at least in standby. I don't use mine as much as maybe some other people do who travel more, so I'm not noticing a big difference. I mean, I came out to CSUN and ran it all in one charge. Granted, I was only there for 2 days, but so
how do you guys get through more than one day on a charge? I have to plug my phone in the afternoon.
I kill a lot of apps in the background. I'm one of those guys that goes through and goes, oh, look, that's running in the background.
Yeah, I'm always in the app switcher. No, I'm not using that. Not using that right now. And always making sure I you know, hit the power button and lock it when not in use. But yeah, I mean,
after I've used my phone for three and a half hours, after I've used it that long, I get, that's it. I gotta plug it in.
Yeah, plug it in. Also, the Apple TV 4.21, I guess, right? Flickering issues, and you have an Apple TV?
I do, and I did notice that every once in a while, sometimes you'd see some weird flickers while you were watching certain types of content, mostly from iTunes and not from Netflix, but there were some issues, and it did seem like that did fix it.
Now, this is interesting. Apple's suing Amazon. Of course, they've opened an app store for Android. And the article here that I'm going to post talks about the fact that if you have a trademark like that, it's up to you to vigorously defend it or otherwise risk losing it, as becoming kind of a common service term. Although the U.S. Supreme Court has clearly ruled that you cannot trademark or patent very commonly used words. So I'm curious, when you put two words together, if they say, well, app's not a real word. I don't know, but what are your thoughts on that? Of course, in Microsoft, they're duking it out, and they're like, well, geez, MS, Windows, that's a pretty common term, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this is all kind of legal semantics, and, you know, the bloggers like to pay a lot of attention to this sort of thing. In the end, if they don't, if the trademark's overturned, then
they just change the name.
Keep calling their things app stores. I mean, whatever.
Right, just change the name, and life goes on. Been there, done that. The big buzz as far as apps, I think this month has been the this LookTel, a money identifier, $1.99, and a lot of folks have been playing with that. And of course, it's great because it takes a continuous picture, so you can just sit there and go through your whole wad of money if you're lucky enough to have a wad of money, and quickly identify your bills. And equally interesting is the app that they're working on to actually do a wealth of different product identification by using not only barcodes but multiple databases. So that should be very interesting to see what they come up with on that space.
I find that the method that they've used in that they basically take the video stream and they monitor it. That's really cool, and I wonder if they're pulling still images out of the video capture that they're getting or something to kind of stabilize their look. Because I mean, I can shake my phone back and forth with a bill underneath it, and it'll still be fine. So it's really kind of amazing. I'd love to get a look at the code, but I kind of doubt that's going to happen.
Well, right. I mean, you think about it. The still images is a challenge due to the low megapixel rate. But right, if you do a continuous video, great. Here's our 720p. I wonder if that might be a solution to doing OCR. I don't know. It's
I don't really think so, because you still need for OCR. You really need a static image in order to really process it, and it needs to be clear. Really, what they're doing isn't really OCR. I guess I can't say for sure, but I don't think they're doing any OCR. I think it's all based on pattern recognition.
Right. That was my vibe. So if they can pull off what they're talking about, that's going to be pretty tremendous. Where you'll do the same thing, you'll just wave it around at your different products that you own, and if it has a photo of that, then great. It just tells you what it is, or maybe the barcode.
That really will be cool.
Yeah, that's going to be very innovative. Well, I guess this kind of takes us into the Android space. I think Joe is back there. I love when people call us when we're live. That's always great. But of course, listen to Tech Chat 93, where we talked very specifically. We did an interview with Code Factory about their mobile accessibility, which has now been officially released. 69 euros, around 95 US. A lot of buzz, and Joe, at CSUN for Android, wouldn't you say? I mean, I was really surprised. And of course, I got to play with some phones as much as I could glean in a short period of time. But a couple of nice ladies let me play with their phone, but it's good.
We had a lot of fun with the Android phone. We actually were using the Android phone on our 3G connection there at the booth. We also were using the Android phone, actually going back and forth to the hotel. Ricky was using her TomTom on her iPhone, and I was using Google Maps through Android, and we were kind of sort of racing them and looking how one was doing versus the other. And it was kind of surprising. They both kind of got us to where we needed to go, which was the most important part. But the other thing was that the Google one kind of took a weird route if you went in and told it a different kind of direction point. Also, it recalculated a little faster, I think, than when Ricky's iPhone and TomTom were going. It still was really neat because we had two versions of Samantha talking on two different phones, which drove our driver kind of crazy. But it was very interesting to be able to have the ability to kind of do that in real time. And I'm old enough to remember the first GPS system that talked, that was in a laptop that you wore on your back. Gil Lutz showed it years ago. And you know, it had like six CD-ROMs. And so to think about all that is coming through the phone and it's something that you hold, it's definitely a wild, crazy time. And, you know, Android was kind of the surprise star of the show. There was Looktel talking that they were releasing for Android, Sendero talking that they're releasing for Android. Of course, we also heard about the Orion, and there's still some other people considering about Android and releasing things for Android. But definitely mobile accessibility, as we talked about earlier this month on Tech Chat, is a product that I really like and I've really enjoyed. It has been a great beta, and the beta still extends. They're still doing some things and working on that, and it's great to see that Code Factory is into this. They announced on Tech Chat that they're going to release the SDK. I believe that's going to be in a month or so. And that's really cool because then we're really going to see the community get involved and add plugins and do some things for that platform. So kudos to Code Factory. I use it, and I enjoy it a great deal.
I don't know how many people here listened to the town meeting last night, but I'd like to second some of the things that Mike said, and it's like that Code Factory's really done a great job with this. Google didn't give them everything they really needed to do what we'd all kind of like to see them do, but the suite of apps that they've developed that give you kind of a walled garden approach to Android, they're excellent. And I'm not sure we really could have asked for much better.
Yeah, that's really made a difference and turned a lot of things around. And I don't know how familiar you are with it. Mike talked a bit about the Cyanogen mod and how that might.
Yeah. I've seen that before, and that's going to be interesting. Definitely, the custom ROMs give us the opportunity to fix some of the things that Google kind of has not addressed, so that'll be cool.
I said it a couple of weeks ago, and I said it again at CSUN, is that this is a gold rush. I think we had a gold rush moment with Apple. We're starting to see people stake their claim and say, okay, this is my area, or this is what I'm going to be very good at, or I'm going to reinvent my company with this particular app. I think we're going to see that in droves with Android. I think the openness kind of lends itself to that, as well as, you know, there's just a feeling of ingenuity and community going on right now. Certainly, if you look at what happened with Nolan and what he did, TalkBack's added a little bit to their program and added a virtual keyboard shortly after the release of mobile accessibility. So there's a little bit of leapfrog, but there also seems to be each one is coming at it in a different way to make it unique. So that's one of the advantages about Android, is that the platform itself lets you kind of slide between custom launchers. So think of it like Windows themes in a way, and people correct me if this analogy is wrong, I'm sure, but if you want a certain theme, if you want a certain shell, you can actually slide in between them. So you're not locked into mobile accessibility. You can still go back to stock Android, or you can pop over to the Eyes Free shell if you feel very comfortable in there. And there are themes that sighted people use as well. There are shells, Launcher Pro, Tasker is a very popular one. And so you're actually using what the technology is allowing you to do, just like everybody else. There are some things like in Tasker that you can make the Android phone do amazing things. It's almost like custom scripting in a way. And so, you know, the fact that we're using the same technology to get what we need out of the phone is just fantastic. And I think that's something that says a lot about what we can do with mainstream technology. I mean, guys, if we think about it, you can go to Best Buy or Target and come out with under your arm with a lot of stuff, a lot of expensive stuff, but a lot of stuff that's going to talk, or at least take a little bit of modification and it's talking.
Yeah, good. Mike's key point is that you have to be, if you want to play in Android space, greater configurability if you're willing to play around. If you want to set it and forget it, then maybe iOS is more your speed. But a few other articles that we link to here include JJ Meadows, AndroidAccess.net. Talkback for Android refreshed and updated, and I guess that's a good thing, right? I mean, it's I would assume
it's
worth
free.
The upgrade. It's free. It's free.
It's free.
I didn't say it was worth the upgrade.
Can't go wrong. It's free.
Yeah. And Sendero announced that they will bring out Look Around for the Android. And, of course, you mentioned earlier LookTel. It was interesting because when I interviewed them, they said, oh, we've got a prototype back in the office, but we don't see enough of an Android market. So in a short period of time, enough people came up and asked for Android that I'm like, wow, got to rethink this. So, again, that's a great, perfect example of why we have to speak up for what it is that we're using and want to do and prove that we are a market.
I mean, while we're on the topic of iPhone and Android, I see a lot of very angry debate about this sort of thing on listservs, on Twitter, and I just really want to encourage everybody to take a step back and look at this in a little bit less of an emotional sense. These are all technology choices. Joe's not wrong for choosing Android over iOS for his phone. I'm not wrong for choosing iOS for my phone over Android. You know, people might expect me to do Android because I'm a geek and I'm a computer guy, but I'm not interested in fighting with my phone like that. You know, and there's so many other things going on in the world, and to stake a claim to a platform and say, well, everyone else sucks if they don't agree with me on this, it's really kind of a waste. And with the prevalence that Android is going to likely have as a community, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, we cannot afford to live in Apple land. It's not something that we want to do if we want to be equal with our sighted peers.
Exactly. Whichever you want, whichever you prefer. If you prefer iOS or Android, you know, right on. But you want both to be fully accessible. And believe it or not, yes, you even want Windows Mobile 7 to be accessible.
whenever
that may be. But you want that, though. We want to be able to go in and get phones right off the shelf of our cell phone stores, or order any phone that we desire and have accessibility. That's something we want.
And as we've said on podcast after podcast, you can reach over and borrow somebody's and very quickly have the opportunity to play with VoiceOver or play with the TTS and Kindle or play with TalkBack on Android. You know, that's a lot better than having to, you know, go out of your way to go see some of these devices, because it's built in or it's available very quickly. And that beats a lot of people used to have to go to CSUN or the summer conventions or know a dealer in their area to be able to see a specialized piece of technology that costs thousands of dollars. It is a wonderful time. And I agree with Pete here. Sometimes I think we get into the internet snarkiness of the web. And we do take sides. I mean, some people are Dodgers fans, some people are Mets fans, some people are, you know, this fan or that fan, and that's okay. It's great to be a fan, but, you know, not to shut out the rest that's out there, because there's a lot of choice. And, you know, I've said this before, 20 years ago, the Walkman was it. Sony Walkman was music. And now, Sony Walkman really isn't much of anything but a name that got retired, as we talked about on Acero Talk.
Yes, it was discontinued.
Yes. It changes. It totally, totally changes. You can never, ever, ever put your foot in one place and say, this is what's going to happen, because it's like sand through a colander. Technology always changes.
Well, speaking of changes...
I'm a big iPhone fan. I'm a big Apple fan. But and Joe and I all poke fun at each other on Twitter about, you know, our respective choices in phone platform. But when it really comes down to it, it's not that big a deal to me. And I think that we need to, as a community, kind of step back and say, hey, you know, we can get on board with both of these things.
Another big thing, so make sure we have time for questions. Another big thing was the release of new browsers. We have Internet Explorer 9, we have Firefox 4, and even, of course, Google. Their naming structure confuses me. They come out with 11 and then come out with 12 before 11's public.
No, wait. This just in. I think three more just came in. Three more versions of Chrome.
Okay. Yeah. I swear it was upping one number every podcast. But so, Pete, I want to ask you some of the specifics. What we see in changes, we'll start, I guess, with IE9 and problems.
Well, what's going on? I'm really glad to see Microsoft step up to the plate with IE9. It's not perfect, but they've done a lot of things around HTML5. I think we'll see, you know, HTML5 video become much more accessible on IE9. You know, the browser is a little bit faster. It's a good upgrade overall. There are a few issues with it accessibility wise, but I think that those will be ironed out in typical time frames.
Now, my son, who's now building websites, says that IE9 is presenting some issues for display, but where Firefox 4 is holding up. So, again, not to say one's better than another. It's just something, of course, if you're building sites and writing web pages, you certainly want to view them on multiple browsers just to see what you're up against. But and then also, I guess one other question. Joe, Zoom Text came out with a release today, but I didn't see that it specifically addresses IE9. So are even this after this upgrade, are users of Zoom Text still supposed to stay with IE8?
Yeah, I've just downloaded this earlier this afternoon. I am still playing with it, so I've only played with it a little bit in IE9. So far, I would still probably lean towards the wait-and-see attitude and see where this goes. I've actually got the release notes here in front of me. Some of the fixes and support is that Zoom Text now supports SAP. I'll let Pete describe that. There's some mouse echo, and there's also some other things here about the default speech now being in expert mode, and they've done some things on how it performs out of the box. So they've done some other tweaks to work a little bit better, and so far it's been very stable. Generally, Zoom Text releases are, and I'll still play with it, but so far I'm extremely happy because, again, here's a company that's still offering free support for a product they released a very long time ago. 9.1 has actually been out for a couple of years now, and they keep adding. The last patch was in November, and they've done this patch too, and I think that's really great that this product has a lot of long legs.
What are they talking about, SAP?
Yeah, they're providing support now for SAP, I think, natively here, without actually reading the release notes. I'm just kind of going over the headers.
And in our abbreviated society, that's not the secondary audio programming, folks. But What about Firefox 4?
Databases.
Have you played with that? Yes, database stuff. What about Firefox 4?
I downloaded Firefox 4 and I messed with it a little bit. I did notice some pretty significant user interface design changes, but I have not really gotten deep enough into it to speak authoritatively.
Well, there was an article saying how to make it look like 3, so a lot of people don't like the new initial visual layout, but I guess a lot of that can be restored. So maybe we should post that article here as well. But also, a lot of people held out because of the lack of WebVism, but apparently they've come out with 0.8, which does support Firefox 4. So those of you needing your captchas can now upgrade to Firefox 4 and be set in that space.
My wife downloaded Firefox 4, and when she booted it for the first time, it actually put itself in full screen. She actually had to go back and reacquaint herself with the UI and kind of add her favorites back. And there were one or two extensions that did not work when she brought it across, which it normally happens when you have a platform change like this. When you have a whole number release, everybody kind of has to go back and invent the wheel to kind of make their stuff work. I've not messed with the no header scripts and all that fun stuff yet. Like Pete, it's still kind of new for me. The weird part is actually when I'm hitting like Alt D up into the address bar and hearing go to website, that's taking me a little bit of time to get used to because I'm not used to hearing that from what I used to hear in Firefox. It does seem speedier and faster, but again, I tend to run virtually vanilla as best I can and kick out a lot of extensions and scripts. So my wife is the one that plays all the farm bills and stuff, and I have to go back and clean out all her Facebook junk.
Well, so we move through these here. We have a few under the Google tag outside of Android, first being the court rejecting the Google Book settlement. This has been going on for at least 5 years, I don't know, really dating back to 2004. And I'd be curious to see what it means at the end of the day if they've actually scanned in 12 million books from various libraries and so forth, trying to digitize all that information. And any of you have any comments on that?
We're
trying
to explain that because
there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there was a lot of orphan work stuff, and that Google was trying to say that if there was no publisher, then they kind of sort of had the opportunity to post that up there. And there was a lot of conversation about, you know, releasing that versus who's going to find to make sure that's an orphan work, and who's going to be in charge of this particular area and this library. And then, of course, you still have the matter of 90 years of copyright, where some people like to extend outwards and still retain copyright. So, you know, there's not as many books in the public domain as people might think, but there's certainly more that can be read in one lifetime. Google was just looking innocently to put all these in one place or have effective places of information so you could make them searchable. Certainly there are other things that are involved in this too. I'm actually simplifying this, in fact, probably too much so. But there are some advantages to having all of this in one place, certainly to make it available for search and to do research. Pete, so you got any ideas?
And I'll ask you, Peter, if you can explain this, because in some cases you can get the whole book, but others you only get excerpts, right? So how does that work?
I guess it depends on how they've implemented the system. Sometimes you can read the whole thing, and sometimes you can't. Technically, they're only supposed to give you the whole thing if it's public domain. But I mean, here's the thing. I think that the copyright laws, as they currently are definitely broken, and I'd like to see that change. But until that happens, I'm not sure I have a specific objection to Google being forced to follow the law. I mean, the law is the law, and if we don't like the law, then we need to, you know, deal with that with the people that make the laws, you know.
The crazy thing that always breaks down for me about books is sighted people pass around books all the flipping time. You know, here's – read my book. Hey, read this book, you know. And, you know, there's no right work there. Nobody's getting repaid there. And so I understand that that's not permanence. I understand that that's not something that's always up. And of course, when it hits the web, it's always available. But, you know, the performance and reading of books has been around forever. There's private libraries that have never been scanned. There are law libraries that will probably never be scanned. But at the same time, it always just strikes me kind of funny because the printed word, for most people, you know, going way, way back, a book had to be hand copied from place to place to make sure you had a copy of the book yourself. So to think that we're arguing over infinite copy of a work that may or may not ever really see the light of day for lots of people is just strange to me, and it kind of saddens me in a way too. But I agree with Pete that the law is the law, and that's what's important here. But perhaps that's something that we need to look at because I'm not really sure in this technical world where the big argument is for some of these publishers.
Right, and I agree with you on that, Joe. And I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the fact that the law doesn't make sense doesn't mean that we should break the law.
Oh, agreed. But some of the law also comes back to a certain mouse getting extended copyrights in order to keep the corporate thing going. And other companies, of course, jumped onto that bandwagon. And, you know, 90 years after you've passed is kind of crazy. I mean, that's an incredibly long tail. And I'm one of these people that believes that having these into the public domain does spur creativity. Certainly anybody who's into mashups has to admit that there's some of the best work can be done through this. I'm dating myself now, but the Beastie Boys and Paul's Boutique is a great record that costs a lot of money to do now because there's so many samples. Same thing happened with Chuck D and some others. They actually had to go out and make their own samples. Beasties actually went out and made their own samples, so they never got sued again because it just really killed them.
Yeah,
so
back in the day when you could just steal it and sounds, just give attribution and you were good to go.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to that, man?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a difference between, as Ice Baby reminds us, you know, I have a, you know, one little symbol in there. And that's
Ice,
what makes
Ice Under Pressure, yeah,
song.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not advocating that, but certainly creativity, we all got to start somewhere. And I think, again, having some of these out there and for you to learn from, I mean, where do you start from if you can't go to a school? With all these budget cuts that are going around in the States, the internet is, in for some of these people, their school. And why not have that ability to read some of these and learn from it?
Yeah, and I definitely agree that you know, we need to update our thinking about a lot of laws to the way technology works. And that's, you know, that's a conversation that I think is worth having.
Sounds like a tech chat we'll have to put together at some point. That sounds like a good topic.
Definitely.
I think we're getting bogged down.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, before we take questions, I'm going to actually open up the floor for questions. But Pete, you have the iPad 2, and I got to see Mike Calvo's. And, you know, I didn't think 2.5 ounces and maybe slightly thinner form factor would make that much of a difference. But it really does feel much better in the hand. But talk about your iPad 2 and kind of what differences you noticed between it and the original device.
So, you know, I'm going to make the Apple fanboys kind of mad here, but that's it. It's thinner, it's a little bit lighter. It is easier to hold. The smart cover opening and closing, locking and unlocking the screen is cool. But, you know, if the video is not important to you, if you're not doing FaceTime over it, which I have done, and it does work and it is pretty cool. If you're not doing stuff like that, then there's no need to run out and wait in line like I did for 2 hours and you know, freeze to buy one.
So you're saying great.
I still want an iPad 2.
You want it.
I still want my, after, you know, the first thing that we landed in San Diego, Mike handed me his iPad 2. And of course he knew that I had an iPad 1. I agree with you about the smart cover. Probably third party manufacturers are going to come up with some interesting case mods.
Oh, we've already seen some.
Yeah. But I still think the smart cover isn't bad for, I don't think it's $39 or $69. Great. But, I still think it's a neat thing because it doesn't add a lot of weight to the device. It does fit on extremely well. I was very skeptical when I saw it on the videos, and playing with mics, I kind of liked it, and I could actually see myself purchasing the $39 one. And excuse me, having iPad 1, one of the things that makes me compelled to it is the HDMI. And being able to flick that audio out to or the video out to Apple TV and the like. So for me, as a large print device, the fact that I could actually look at this as a low vision user and then put it up on a 40-inch monitor has me kind of salivating for things like Affinity Blade and stuff like that. So the fact that I can actually make this even larger is a compelling thing for me. Now, with that said, I think Saturday Night Live said it best, only Steve Jobs could make you feel guilty about your Christmas present. I don't feel burned that I have an iPad 1 because I actually have people in my family that I can actually pass this and port this down to. But I do agree with Pete that not everybody would find this a compelling upgrade. But if you don't have one and you've waited, this is a kind of a great time for you because you can get, if you can find one, get an iPad 2 and really get a lot of the benefits of the faster processor. And the other thing is for blind individuals, the speaker is different. Pete, do you find on the iPad 1, the speaker is kind of off to the side. On the iPad 2, it's kind of behind the unit. Has that been a bit of a distraction for you?
It depends on where, it depends on the surface that the iPad is sitting on, since it is kind of in the back. And if you've got it sitting on certain surfaces, it kind of reflects the sound and makes the sound a little funny. But I think that was probably a sacrifice or a design decision they had to make due to the thinness of the device.
Agreed.
We had a question about if we've heard anything from Bookshare. Well, we haven't. Certainly, when they put something out, we'll let you know about it. Kind of same thing with Zoom Reader. We were told at CSUN it was submitted to the App Store, and generally it doesn't take more than 4 business days, although we have heard of some exceptions of things that take a lot longer, but it's making me scratch my head and go, I don't know, but...
Well, looking back at CSUN, there are always moments where you plan and you say something might happen, when there's an App Store involved.
Next question. Well, you say when iPad 2, but there's an iPad 3 around the corner. Well, yeah, once a year, there's going to come out with something. You know, at some point,
iPhone 5.
Yeah, iPhone 5. Well, I mean, at some point you got to get out and play.
There were a lot of rumors that there was going to be another iPad refresh in the fall, and. I kind of doubt that.
With the Japan, what happened there?
1.5.
And there are like 5 components for iOS that come from Japan, so I think everything's going to be delayed. Isn't that what the vibe you got, Pete?
I don't know that they're going to be under that heavy a supply constraint because Apple's got the cash to pay for the premiums of getting things going elsewhere. But my point really is, so if there's an iPad 3 in the fall, there's an iPad 3 in the fall. You know, what are you going to do? You can't hedge your bets forever on something. I could make that argument every year, like Joe was saying. iPhone 5 might come out this summer. It might not. Might be
all the
early
people who ran in and all the people who ran out and bought 3GSs for $50, or some people who may have joined Verizon and gotten an iPhone 4, not necessarily on this talk, but others. New going into that there's a possibility. Apple likes to refresh. They have a yearly model, and that's just kind of the nature of the biz. I have an LG Ally Android phone. That thing was obsolete the day it came out of the box because Android phones come in your box as a breakfast cereal.
Well, Richard asks which Android phones are LTE capable. So my next question would be which markets are LTE capable because we got up to San Diego, and we were planning on using that, and there wasn't even an option, even in a good-sized market like that. So,
there's a list on Verizon's site of which ones are and which ones will be soon. The only LTE-capable 4G phone right now is the Thunderbolt, which you've seen, right? Yeah, that one is all touchscreen, so you don't have the physical navigation keys, but it is a cool device, and that... The Wi-Fi tethering on that is ridiculously fast. It rivals a cable connection.
So, Mike's Epic. Oh, they don't have that for Verizon. That's just Sprint.
That's a WiMAX though.
Oh, okay.
Right. With crazy phones like Samsung, could be called the Galaxy here, but called Fascinate there, and the Droid is called the Milestone in Europe. So it's always kind of crazy because it like Pete was saying, it depends on the carrier, it depends on the market, and it depends on the country.
Yeah, I mean that's still really in its infancy, most definitely. Well, if you want to text questions, folks, send those out. Let's see, what else do we have here in the land of news? I want to ask you about this, Pete, the security ramifications. Australia just rolled out their service called iVote, allowing people to vote either over the phone or through the internet. And, of course, they get a 12-digit verification code, but claim that once they submit their vote, it is encrypted, and they don't know what person it belongs to. But yet, there's a mechanism to validate that you have voted, and if you don't, you're actually fined money. But... what are your thoughts on the security ramifications? Do you think this is anything we could ever see in the U.S. or?
Well, it's hard to say, and Australia is no disrespect to anybody that lives in Australia or the Australian government, but I find it hard to believe that there's such a thing as a 100% secure system. We've seen time and time again that that's actually not true. RSA and Komodo have learned that lesson the hard way, and they're security companies. McAfee, I can go on and on. So. I do think that technology can have a place in voting, and I definitely wouldn't necessarily be opposed to it, but I think we need to be careful about how we implement something like that, if we ever do.
I like Britain's model with the big red button. You just kind of vote on television, and it's kind of instantaneous, and after a show airs, they have the ability to vote it up or vote it down, and it's kind of the audience index, and so right away whether the show was popular or not. It's kind of the American Idol method of voting, but that's the way that some people would like. I mean, there are some people who want to be able to do it from the web. I respect that. Certainly, social hacking, like Pete has always said, as well as I, social hacking is the most effective hacking. So there's comments we could make about previous elections here that I think I'll stay away from.
Yeah, I move on because I do have a few questions, but I when you say American Idol, American Idol way of voting, I think, 50 cents as many times as you want. Is that
that's correct. That's maybe what I think maybe that's how we'll get it done. Yeah, we'll pay for roads that way.
Hey, yeah, exactly. Buy the vote. Rock the vote and then buy the vote. Someone asked your thought about T-Mobile for Business, and I don't know, without any of us really using it, although Mike Calvo's was a big T-Mobile fan, but now that with the acquisition of AT&T, he's decided to go over to Sprint. But
I don't think the landscape for business users is going to be much different than it is for consumers. I mean, it's going to come to a point where AT&T says, hey, you know, we're transitioning away from this 3G network. If you want to continue to have 3G access, you're going to have to switch devices. And they may also say, and you have to sign up for a new AT&T rate plan, too.
Well, so, and also, you know, the other thing I would say, it depends on if you travel, if you go to more rural areas. I think it's set up better, like you said, in larger urban areas. And in the South, here in the Midwest, there are certainly some holes in their service, just as there is with Sprint when you get out of your larger cities.
Yeah, the magic eight ball says ask again later.
Yes, and Luis reminds us that SAP has three definitions. Yes. actually four. The one of you SAP? Okay. Or tree SAP. I don't know. Maybe five there, but acronyms. He gave three good acronyms there. And I think there's another. No, there's not. Okay.
Yeah, but we do have a demo of the iVote, so those who are interested can go back to not this Saratalk 64, but I believe it was Saratalk 63, where we actually had Scott Rakowski do a great demo of that. So if you're interested in hearing more, definitely pop back to www.sarotalk.com and give a listen.
Should I talk about, you know, how voter participation in the country is broken? I better stay away from that.
That sounds like another topic entirely. And it seems like I need a six-pack of Dr. Pepper for that one.
Yeah, we also got when you're talking about future topics, certainly the these new regs for the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, we need to do a tech chat on that because there's a lot of changes. Like the only service animal is now a dog, and what about the seven people in the country that have horses and some bigger issues than that even, so that we want to go back and look at. But blind bargains, JJ, he did a interview with Ricky about our DocuScan Plus, certainly a big showstopper, I would say. It was really the bulk of traffic, people coming up. And Joe, you did quite a few demos, so you want to talk about that, and we'll do a little blatant shameless plug.
Absolutely, and also this morning we were featured in the BBC Ouch coverage of CSUN for DocuScan Plus. It was definitely a great time to be able to show people the fact that we had DocuScan Plus running on the Mac, so you could scan on Windows and read on your Mac, and scan on Mac and read in Windows. Had the camera there. That was good fun to be able to show people how simple the camera is to set up and how it fits onto the mat, so you get an idea. If you have some issues with spatial orientation, you could just find where to put your hands on the mat, feel the little places to put the camera. Very simple, very easy. Extend out the camera, and you got a good idea of where to put the paper, so that makes things a little easier as well. And of course, DocuScan Plus tells you whether the page is upside down or right side up. Makes it very simple, real easy to fold into a camera bag or a laptop bag or a MacBook bag and carry with you from place to place. And a great time, and we had a good time at CSUN. We were actually next to our friends at AI Squared, and had a lot of good times talking to people that came by and recognized us from the podcast, and that gave us a chance to talk about DocuScan Plus.
Yeah, we were also.
I just had a weird idea. I was wondering if the hover cam would connect to the camera connection kit for the iPad.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Okay. Okay. Making mental note.
Hold make mental note of that one. Well, it's interesting. We're also by Nokia, and you know, now you see Code Factory come out with Mobile Speak, and Talks come out with options for the four touchscreen Nokia phones. I'm wondering if that's too little, too late. I'm just going to go recapping some other things that got my interest in the month of March. Yeah.
Sorry, no, my mistake. Poor Code Factory.
Well, it's interesting because when I spoke with Nuance, he said, "Yeah, we're working with Code Factory." And I go, "Is it voices? Or are you going to come up with your own app?" And they were like, "Well, we never can say what's going to happen in the future. So maybe they're going to play around in Android too. We shall see, folks." That's always the interesting thing to see.
Symbian. we still have like Symbian 3, and our friend Steve Nutt tells us that there's still a life left in Symbian. So if for downward markets, there's certainly a possibility that Symbian will exist. I'm not sure about the apps and the ecosystem, but you know, for those that are still fans of Symbian, life is not over yet.
Certainly. Any final thoughts here before we wrap up this great Tech Chat 95? Pete?
No.
Really. Talked out? Okay.
I think it was a month of change. We had Windows 7 Service Pack 1. We had Internet Explorer 9. We had Firefox 4. We had iTunes updates. We had iOS updates. We had CSUN. We had Android. There was just a lot of stuff going on this month, and there was no way for us to get it all in this 1 hour. So definitely come over and talk with us at the Tech Voice chat room over at Samnet. Remember that you can grab a 7-day trial of Samnet by going over to www.satogo.com. We'll be in there talking about other stories with our Samnet members. It gets pretty hot and heated in there, and this is actually where Pete and I do a lot of our conversations, is in Samnet. So if you think that we were being too cordial, probably, but we aren't when we're in voice chat. It gets very, very combative at times. So come on over and join us.
But it's all friendly. But we had a special tech chat a week from Saturday. What would that be, the 8th? You want to explain that?
The 9th?
It's the 9th, yes. Yes, the 9th.
Is it the 9th?
Yes, you are correct.
We've got a piece going out real soon. We're going to actually feature the Beep Baseball Association. Their new season is coming up, and we're going to have some guests on board Stephen Guerra and some others to talk about the upcoming season. They've got some exciting developments and announcements to talk about, and we're going to do that on a special time, Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Saturday being April 9th, as my friends have reminded me. We're really looking forward to this. We also have some other exciting things to talk about in relation to this tech chat. There's going to be an announcement or two, so it's definitely going to be worth the listen live or to the archive, as well as, they've got the World Series coming up, and that's always exciting. And I know a lot of friends who are in different leagues, so I keep up with them. I actually have Stockton Stingrays listed on my Twitter account, so if you're interested in the baseball league, or if you're interested in joining, or if you're interested in just attending, this is going to be a time to listen and learn a lot about that wonderful organization and what they do.
And baseball's pretty fun, guys. I mean, I played for a year or so, and I don't have really the time to do it anymore. But it is a fun game.
I played it back in the 70s when it first came out, like 77, I think, 76, 77. And it was always cool. If you hit the thing hard enough, it would just quit beeping, you know, and I guess they made them a little better now, but good stuff, and it's good camaraderie, and yeah, that would be fun to, I'm too old and fat to do that
really,
now.
There are some really, really cool people that play beepball around the country.
And I joked about being sedentary and geeky, but we've done an exercise chat back in January, and you know, it's always good for those of us who sit behind the computers all day to go out and do this kind of stuff, and meet others who share the same interest as yourself. So definitely give us a listen on April 9th.
Exactly. Well, thanks a lot, Pete and Joe. And of course, last Thursday of every month we do the, and sometimes we carry it over if it falls right on the end there, but last Thursday of every month we do This Month in Access Technology, where we kind of take a look at some of the big stories and try to make sense of them all, at least get some alternate viewpoints to try to explain what's going on. So we invite you to go to serotalk.com. We just posted podcast 64 as well, with some CSUN interviews, a lot of good stuff. So till we meet again, and hopefully shortly, if you come to the Samnet chat room, go get your free 7-day at satogo.com. But until we meet again, let's stay connected and stay directed. This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.